Martinez firing back.
Jonathan Dragon Martinez!
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered.
Please tell me that's on video. I've never been happier.
I'm made for a fucking podcast. That's dangerous. Listen to me, we're out of here.
Welcome to UFC Unfiltered. My audio may be a little off today. I don't usually have my microphone and all that stuff at home. I'm actually in California right now, so I'm in a hotel. So I apologize if my audio is as bad as my normal content. We have Jeremy Piven today and Jonathan Martinez after that upset over Saeed Nurmagomedov. It was a great fight. I mean, a great fight. I think it was the 11th.
Jonathan's on here because I demanded he come on here.
Yeah, it was a tremendous fight, man. Tremendous.
All right, he fights at a different breed MMA, which is fitting because he's a different type of breed. Bang, bang. Hey, I'm losing into it. Yeah, that's cringy. I taught this morning, and I just found out my kid's class instructor is not feeling too good. Mikey.
Okay.
Jiu-Jitsu. So I'm going to cover that class. It's one of these fucking days. I feel like an Avenger.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you didn't feel well or you were worried you were going to get sick. You're just going to have to cover it.
Ah, Jimmy, it's what I do. I do.
You didn't even notice my spray tan, Matt. I got a spray tan for you.
Did you really? Are you doing a movie, Jimmy?
No. I'm doing something, but I just figured I would get a spray tan.
And you got a nice tight jiu-jitsu haircut. It's very tight to your head.
I do that because I'm going gray. Like, I'm already fat and mushy. I don't need to look gray and old too. So I try to keep it nice and tight to the head. I'm going to do what you do anyway. I'm going to get rid of it completely. I'm just going to completely cut it all off. I'm sick of it. My hair sucks.
You know what I've been doing lately, Jimmy, is I have this little mirror, like this little mirror that they probably have in jail, like these little things. And I put it in my steam shower and I shave my head while I steam. I sit down and I just, woo. And then when I get out,
you do the quick test.
I heard you typing, Jimmy, and it just
yes. You do the quick. I forgot. When I have this set up, you can hear if I type, so I'll be quiet. Thank you.
That's okay, Jimmy. I'm just letting you know. But yeah.
I'm glad you said that.
Back to my bald head. It's not that exciting. We got Jeremy. You know, Jeremy Piven. Not only he was also in the movie Judgment Night.
I didn't see that.
Oh, I liked it as a kid. I liked it. It was like a bunch of he paid a douchebag, but
did he?
They rent a RV. Him and his buddies, Emilio Estevez, Cuba Gooding Jr., and they go into like Detroit to go see like a ball game, and then their RV breaks down, and then they're like, "Oh, this is Judgment Night. They got to get out."
What year was that, Matt? Oh yeah, 93. All right, yeah.
93, man. I was a 19-year-old young Matty S going in and saying, "What if my RV broke down and I had to get back home?" I didn't say that. I was just thinking that.
Well, but that's what makes a horror movie scary. What if that happened to me? How would I handle that?
I would have handled it like Emilio Estevez or Cuba Gooding Jr. At one point, he had a pipe and he's in the sewer. He goes, "Do you ever want to see how you?" You dealt with combat, how you be in combat or something like that. But it's like, oh, yeah. Cuba. Yeah, Cuba Gooding.
He was also in Heat. He played the guy named, I think, Dr. Bob. I love when really established actors have these roles that they do. Like they're in a movie and they had a smaller part before they became tremendously famous. He was also on Seinfeld. I don't know how many episodes he was in, if it was just one episode where he played another version of George Costanza. It was a great scene, the scene I saw.
I didn't know this. I didn't know that Jeremy Piven's older sister, Shira, has been married to well-known director Adam McKay since 1999. Jeremy said, "Yo, bro-in-law, how about Anchorman 3? Why don't you give me a fucking bone?"
He doesn't need it, though. Jeremy's not like us. He actually has a real acting career. I would be bothering Adam McKay for work. But, you know, Jeremy Piven's like a legit, really good actor with a really good career. He doesn't need that. I need that.
But he interviewed Michael Chandler for one of his podcasts.
He did, yeah.
He has a podcast. Did you know that?
I did, yeah. He's a good cast in this Sweetwater movie, too, which is what he's promoting today. I love Richard Dreyfuss. Kevin Pollak is a friend of mine. He plays a basketball coach. It's a true story. We can ask him about it.
He plays a basketball coach? Isn't he my height?
Well, the coach doesn't have to be tall. The coach isn't shooting.
I've got to be tall in jiu-jitsu.
Well, back in those days, they were not as tall. Back in the days of the guy he's playing, they were probably a lot shorter anyway.
Ask Kareem Abdul-Jabbar about being short.
Yeah, that is a good point.
You know, him versus Bruce Lee, they're the same size on the floor when he had him in that fucking rear naked. It was almost like a bulldog choke, but it was like a rear naked. You don't remember that? Game of Death, motherfucker!
I've seen Game of Death. I remember Game
times,
of Death.
Times, man. Give it the times. Those times are a while ago.
Kareem is so interesting, too, because you don't meet many guys that actually trained with Bruce Lee. Like, you really don't meet a lot of guys that interacted with Bruce Lee.
Yeah, because they're most likely dead. He should be joining us shortly, Jeremy.
He does stand-up, too. I've never worked with him. But he tours, he does stand-up.
Has he done the stand-up before he did the comic, did the acting? Or did he – he's always been a funny guy.
He's from, Evansville, I think, Indiana. I don't know how far – or maybe Illinois. I wonder if he did any type of, like, improv acting. Because Chicago is very big for improv acting. I think in San Francisco, they have the Groundlings are in San Francisco. There's a few really big improv troops, I guess. I'm wondering if he worked with any of them. Improv acting is really hard.
What's up, Jeremy? What's up, boys?
Hey,
what's going on, man?
How are you?
How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I feel like I know both of you for, you know, Jim for different reasons than Matt Serra, that's for sure.
You watched the fights, Jeremy.
I watched the fights. I was stupid enough to train with Rashad Evans back in the day. Because
smack him around?
What's that?
Smack him around a little bit.
You know, I have to be honest with you. Attempting to take him down was the most humbling thing I've ever done in my life. He is as solid as they come.
How long did you train for? Was it something you trained actively for a while, or did you just kind of play around with it a little bit?
You know, I had dabbled in Muay Thai for a while, and then I was just boxing. And then what happens is when you're a dummy like me, you don't roll your shoulders properly, and then you tear off your supraspinatus because you're a slave to your ego and you're throwing power punches when you don't need to. So, I started grappling with Rashad because he's a buddy of mine. And that's one of the reasons I love the game, is because I have a perspective, because I know what these guys, with the sacrifice they have to make and the level that they play on is frightening.
Yeah, it is weird when you see guys, like, I've never trained actively for, like, a teeny bit, but nothing to even speak about. But when you realize how strong these guys are, I've had guys do things to me in studio and I've interviewed them just to see what it feels like. And you're like, yeah. I only walk around safely because certain men are deciding not to kick my ass. Like, you realize how helpless you would be if guys like that wanted to do damage, they could do damage. It really is humbling. You're right.
But those guys, and Matt can attest to this, those guys are the sweetest because they're trained killers. They have nothing to prove.
Jimmy calls me a sweet boy at least once every episode, and I shy away.
I do.
Some of us can be a little sweet, you know? Sometimes we're sad. Sorry. Go ahead, Jimmy.
No. See, I was reading about Sweetwater is the name of the film. And I was looking at some of the cast. I love Richard Dreyfuss. I love anything Richard Dreyfuss does. Who is he in the film, and had you worked with him before?
I had worked with him years ago, and as you are, I'm a huge fan of him. And he's really back. In this film, he crushes it. And he plays Podoloff, who was the commissioner of the NBA at the time. I play Joe Lapchick, who was the coach of the New York Knicks in 1950. And he basically poaches Nat Sweetwater Clifton from the Globetrotters into the Knicks, breaks the color barrier. Nat Sweetwater Clifton becomes the Jackie Robinson of the NBA. And it's a story we don't know.
Oh, wow. Oh, wait, so he was one of the first black players, and you took them
from player, right?
The very first, and you took them from the Globetrotters.
Yeah,
that's wild in its own right there. That's crazy.
Isn't it funny with the Globetrotters too? Like, because I saw them when I was a kid. Everybody liked Meadowlark Lemon and Curly Neal. And all those guys, but you forget, like, yeah, those guys are probably NBA level players, most of them, to be able to do what they're doing. Most of them could play in the NBA or right below where you'd need to be to play in the NBA. I didn't realize the first black player actually came from the Globetrotters.
Will Chamberlain came from the Globetrotters. So
did he really?
It's crazy. You're absolutely right. The skill level has to be so high, but, you know, can they transition? And this is a great true story. Everett Osborne plays Sweetwater Clifton, and he was playing professionally overseas, and he's a brilliant, brilliant actor, and it's the best actor-athlete performance I've ever seen in my life, by far.
Oh, shit. When is this coming out, and where?
April 14th, only in theaters everywhere. Ooh. And, you know, it's been a while since we've had a good sports movie. I mean, you remember Hoosiers and Moneyball.
Yeah.
This is one of those films, you know. I when I was reading the script, I thought, I get to play a guy with a heart who's passionate about the right thing. Count me in. I played a couple douchebags in my life, and so now it's great. You know what I mean? It's great to play a guy with a huge heart.
I find acting to be much harder and much scarier than stand up. Like, because with stand up, when it's not going well, I have the freedom to address it and to kind of make it what I need it to be to for instance, it's a bad crowd or if I'm just bad, sometimes I can ruin all of our nights and that's satisfying to me. Or I can shift gears or I can just tell the crowd how much this stinks. Being in a scene and it's not going well or I'm not connected, I find me much more terrifying than stand up. I feel with stand up I can always do something to salvage it for myself, and it's just me. But you have responsibility to other people when you're acting as well. I just think acting is a lot harder.
Well, listen, I'll give you a little perspective on how hard stand up is. So I've been on stage since I was 8 years old, and that's, you know, many, many decades, right? So, and I also come from a background in sketch comedy. I started with Chris Farley in Chicago in the touring company of Second City, you know, in the 90s, a million years ago, right? So, and I've been improvising and writing, you know, my own dialogue and blah, blah, blah. Now, smash cut to 2017 when I started touring, right? Which for Jim, he's laughing at me like I'm a baby because he's been doing it for 30 years or whatever you've been doing it, right? So my point is, getting up on stage as a stand-up, when I'm used to a big, you know, I got up at the Laugh Factory for the first time, and it's a small stage, and you feel pinned in, and you're up against the wall, and it's terrifying, terrifying. And so I have my bearings as an actor, but to navigate the material and to stick the landing and to be present, but also ahead of yourself in terms of what you're transitioning into is insanely hard. So for me, I think it's all a matter of perspective. It took me, you know, 200 to 250 shows a year just to get my sea legs and be able to navigate a set. But, you know, I know all the tricks of when you're an actor and you have those moments, like you said, where you don't feel connected and you're not in the scene, you got to use that. You use everything. Oh, shit. You're bombing in the scene. Connect with that. But also relocate yourself, because it's all about locating yourself in the scene. Who is this person to me? What's the status of all these people? You know, all these different variables that you can lock into. As an actor, you have everything that's written. As a stand-up, if it's not going well and you start doubting yourself, as you know, Jim, it's a slippery fucking slope, man. It's awkward.
I also think too, coming into stand-up as an established public person is also hard because, like when I started, nobody had any expectations of me. I was just this local idiot going up. But when you're known and people look at you, I almost feel like it's more pressure for a guy who's already famous. Like, people are like, okay, and they either want you to do well or they want you to do poorly. But like Chris Rock will go on stage at the Cellar and he'll say, being famous buys you about 5 minutes, and then people want you to be good. I always feel like when I see guys who are established actors or other things going on stage, it just seems so terrifying to me, like, because people have, oh, I know you, and now I expect something from you, as opposed to the anonymity I was able to enjoy for a long time as I got decent. Somebody who's already famous can't enjoy that anonymity for a while. So everybody watches and judges every single move. So I think the fact that you stuck with it is very impressive, because you made it through all that stuff, or any type of critique people would give you that any new comic would go through. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I also, listen, Jim, I hear everything. So like as I'm walking on stage, I hear another comic say, anyone thinks they could do stand-up now, this fucking guy. You know, and I hear that, and it inspires me. That's inspiring to me, because I know you guys have worked hard for these spots, and some actor dummy coming in and taking your spots is not welcomed. So it's my job, believe me, Matt, if I sucked, Jim would know, because it would be hysterical, because everyone would be talking about it. But the fact that it's radio silent means that I'm doing okay.
That's hysterical. Now you're feeling judged. You're feeling judged by some of these comedians.
Yeah.
You know what's so funny? They're putting, you know what? That's almost, it could be where, you know, I bust my ass, I'm fighting in the cage, getting marked up a little bit, you know, my jaw clicks. Also, Jeremy wants to put the gloves on. I might be like, yo, what the fuck, man? He's all in the CM Punk. The guy's in the U. Well, that's different, though, because no offense, CM Punk couldn't really fight. If you're funny, and I like CM Punk, he's a nice guy. But that was almost like that, but it's as if he could fight. So if you're funny, so you're carrying your weight. But these other guys are looking at it like, man, we're in trenches. That guy was on. We're looking to get into fucking movies. We're looking to get a sick guy. This motherfucker, I've been watching him since Judgment Night. And now Entourage, that fuck. Now it's almost like they feel like you're dipping your toes into their pool. You can. Has anybody been nice to you? Has anybody been out of the ordinary being like, look, I'm glad or no?
D.L. Hughley embraced me. You know, certain guys, and I remember everyone. By the way, I respect the space that you occupy when you stand up. I grew up watching Richard Pryor and all those guys, and I love it. So when I don't run the light, I know, you know what I mean? I take advantage of my time during there. So comics, they get it that I'm taking this seriously. But guys like DL were incredibly, who is like Jim, that he's been around, and he's a great, great comic. And just having guys like that say, you're doing your thing, man. Craig Robinson, guys like that. No white guys.
You know? It's funny too, because I never begrudge an actor doing stand-up, only because we've been trying to invade actors' jobs for decades. Like, stand-up's job is to get a sitcom. You want the gig, you want the movie. Jim Carrey was a stand-up. Richard Pryor, I mean, go all the way back. So I don't think we're in any position to be mad that an actor is doing stand-up when stand-ups have been doing acting work forever. So I never mind seeing it.
Well, I mean, that would be logical what you're saying, but the reality is also there's a reason why you can't name, other than Robin Williams, anyone that's been prolific as an actor that has successfully transitioned into stand-up, because it takes time. A lot of time.
It does. And there's a lot of bad actors and a lot of bad comics too, which I enjoy both, by the way. I love watching somebody bomb. I really do, because I, especially if it's somebody I respect and I like a guy I know is funny, to watch how they navigate it is interesting. Like, do they snap at the audience? Like Colin Quinn, I've known Colin for 25 years. And if I see him having a bad set in the Cellar, he always navigates it a certain way. He doesn't panic, and he doesn't blame the crowd. Like, he does so many things right that I would do wrong. So it's really interesting to watch a guy who I know is great having an off night and still handling it well. It's like, yeah, there's still a lot of work I need to do, a lot of improving.
Chappelle said to me, if you're not going to be funny, at least be interesting. And I feel like Colin Quinn is always interesting, and he's not for everyone.
Right.
And so, you know, I could see how that could happen to him.
It's funny you did the improv. When you were in Heat, who did you play in Heat? I meant to ask you that in the beginning of the interview and I forgot.
I played the doctor. I, you know, that was one of my 40 movies before I did Entourage that, you know, I would just get these cameos and just try to make the most of it. And then if the director didn't yell cut, I would just kind of keep improvising and talking. And I would just take a scrap and make a meal out of it. I won the Fresh Face of the Year award at 37 years old. And I said, there's nothing fresh about my face. Thank you.
who's your scene with? It's been a long time since I've seen Heat.
A guy named Robert De Niro. I don't know if you're familiar.
Oh, it was with De Niro. Austin. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
How was that when you first, like, I mean, again, because you were already a seasoned actor by then, but do you feel differently when you work with someone like that or no?
I wouldn't call myself seasoned. I mean, you know, I've been on stage my whole life. When you're doing a scene with De Niro, it's, you know, he's the GOAT, and it would be like a journeyman NBA player posting up against Jordan. And so you're terrified, but I was delusional enough. I knew that if I was firing on all cylinders, that I could contribute, and then I could make something out of this role and craft it into something that wasn't fully there. So, you know, he takes the shirt off my back, literally, and the scene's supposed to end, and they don't yell cut. And he goes, you know, give me your shirt. And I go, and they don't yell cut. And I was like, but my daughter gave me this shirt. And he goes, fuck you. And then he just kept saying, you know, fuck you. And to have De Niro say fuck you was the greatest moment of my life. So I just keep throwing shit at him and navigating. And I had a blast. And, you know, so I have a little moment in history. But you just keep putting those together and something's going to break through.
Yep. Did you ever regret, because I know you left Larry Sanders after 2 years, and a lot of times people just, they don't want to do the role anymore. Did you ever do something like that and go, fuck, I wish I hadn't? Or did you think, no, it was the right time and you're glad you did?
That was another case where that was my first job out of college, and that was arguably one of the greatest shows ever on television. And yeah. That show, you know, basically ignited original programming at HBO and nothing like it. So I knew how good it was, but I got offered the lead in PCU, which was this politically correct university, a great comedy that 11 people saw. So in retrospect, maybe I didn't make the right decision, but it was my battery is running low. So what? I don't give a fuck. Yeah, you know, that show will live on forever. But what happens is when you're the last guy on the bench, which is what I was on the Larry Sanders Show, I was playing the head writer, and I thought it'd be funny to play the head comedy writer and to play a guy who wasn't funny and lived in terror of being, you know, basically exposed. And that's kind of the character I played. But once I said, I have to go, you guys, will you let me go to do this film? They wrote me this incredible episode that was my exit. So that was a blast. The only thing that I did, my only point of concentration while I was doing that show, was to not literally break and start laughing whenever Jeffrey Tambor opened his mouth, because he's a genius.
He's the fucking,
hey now.
I've loved him since, and Justice for All and the Ropers. Yeah. I mean, you know, Jeffrey Tambor is awesome. And that's such an interesting thing too. The funny guy, the writer who writes funny, but isn't like a funny person, the fear of being exposed. That really creates a monster, like, because then people who are afraid of being exposed as not being funny when they're around comedy get very aggressive sometimes, and they get very, very, they're very hypersensitive because they're always terrorized, like an imposter syndrome type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So you've got a few of those in your life, Jim, is that what you're saying?
Sure, in the mirror, yeah. I mean, yeah. I've met a lot of people like that over the years, and it's always been interesting. And for a long time, I didn't know what it was. But then as you get older, you're like, oh, that's probably what that is. That person is afraid of being exposed.
Interesting.
It's interesting because how did you guys link up? Because it's just this interesting couple.
Me and Jimmy? Well, you know what it was, Jeremy? I was camping. I'm one of the few guys to say I was camping with Dana White. I do a show called Dana White Looking for a Fight, where we look for,
of course.
So me and Dana are in the woods, and he told me about this podcast for the UFC. I wasn't really interested, but then he mentioned Jimmy, and I always got along with Jimmy because I used to do the old Opie and Anthony show when I was fighting to promote my fights. So I'd see Jimmy, and then I'd see Jimmy in Vegas a couple of times and at fights. So we always got along. So I go, all right, I'll entertain that. 6 years later, me and my little bird, look at us. Look at us. Jimmy, do it back. I don't want to embarrass you. But this thing worked out somehow, you know?
That's amazing.
I want to ask about your podcast, though, because you have one, yeah. And you interviewed a studly, stocky fighter named Michael Chandler. Tell me about your podcast. Is that a weekly thing, or is that?
It was a weekly thing. And then I ended up going to Slovakia to do this film, and I broke 8 ribs doing a fight sequence. I'm sure, Matt, you've broken ribs? No.
No, but I have not. I have not, but I've seen it, and there's nothing you could do for it.
Yeah, it's brutal. So I broke 8 ribs. I'm going to come back on this podcast and talk about that film, because I've been putting it together for 12 years, and it's basically my dream project. And
Jeremy just disappeared. Here's what probably happened. He said he was running out of batteries. I'm going to assume that he just ran out of batteries.
Normally, I tell you not to assume. But in this case, Jimmy, we lost the great Jeremy. Yep.
And he was wrapping. He had to wrap up anyway because his rep said he had another interview. Okay. But just let him know, Jake, that we didn't hang up on him. And it was a very funny ending. Let's promote his project anyway because he was a great guest.
Yeah.
It is called Sweetwater, and it's about the first black player in the NBA. It is a true story. He plays the coach of the Knicks at the time, and it's in theaters only. And he's a great actor, so go and support that. It's a really interesting story. I had no idea Wilt Chamberlain played for the Harlem Globetrotters. Matt, can you hold on? Because I'm about to piss my sweatpants. Let's pause real quick, okay?
Jimmy.
I'll be right back, buddy.
Get on air. Let's get some ratings. What's your plans, Jimmy? What you got going on?
I'm away because I was a part of the Bert Kreischer roast, which is premiering April 1st. It's on a streaming, OnlyFans TV streaming. They're trying OnlyFans TV, and it's free, so you can watch it for nothing on April 1st. And it was actually a killer roast, like it was really good. And we doing the premiere tonight, and Whitney has been so good to me that she asked me to come, so I came. And I also went down to do Kill Tony. I was in Rogan's new club for Kill Tony. You can go to Kill Tony's YouTube and watch that. It was fucking great. Where it's it was myself and Whitney and Bert, and you get all of these young comics that go up, and they get a 1 minute thing, and then we joke with them afterwards. And Hinchcliffe is a great fucking host. He's a really, really funny dude. So go check it out on YouTube. It was a great episode, and I'm happy to be invited to anything. So I come to things I'm invited to.
I don't feel too hot, Jimmy.
You probably need a little something in your stomach.
What is he saying?
Saeed Nurmagomedov, that was a tremendous fight. The fact that Jonathan Martinez survived that first round, and in the end, the beginning of the third round, if you remember the fight, Nurmagomedov had a great beginning. He had him in a body lock in the third. And Jonathan Martinez is a very tough guy to finish.
Jimmy, I don't think I'm teaching tonight.
Well, yeah, stay home if you don't feel good.
I don't feel too good. Who could? I'm thinking, who can we have teach? You want to come?
I mean, I'm not capable of doing it.
Let's get back to some MMA news. I think our producer's right.
Yeah, is Jonathan coming in? We're all over the place today. I'm on the road. Jeremy was great, by the way. Thanks to Jeremy. He's a very fun guy to interview. I've never interviewed him before, so hopefully he'll come back when he has more time or he plugs his computer in.
Man, I hope there's not a bug going around, man.
You know? Well, you said somebody else is sick, right?
Yeah, my kids' class teacher. No, I'm not feeling hot.
By the way, Matt, we did not address the fact that Paulo Costa is very close to finalizing a new multi-fight contract with the UFC. He said he wants to fight Chimaev. They had a run-in or something like that because Chimaev's going up to middleweight. He won't fight welterweight anymore. What do you think about that? And again, Costa is a great fighter. That's a really tough fight, Chimaev, depending on how he does at 185.
Chimaev versus who again?
Paulo Costa.
Paulo Costa's got to get in there. All he does is talk about the secret juice. He plays these games. I like him. I think he's funny. I think, you know, But he's got to get in there and put an ass whipping on somebody. I don't
care. Yeah, Strickland too.
He's 57 years old. He looks good.
Yeah, he looks great. Also, Sean Strickland, Costa would be a great fight.
He's up for it.
Sean Strickland?
Yeah, man, he's up for anything.
Yeah, he'd fight a warehouse if you put it in front of him. He's just one of those guys that likes to fight. Like, I think he genuinely enjoys physical conflict. And have they announced a date yet, Matt, or our producers for Connor against Chandler? Has that been anything about that or no?
Nah.
Do we know anything more about that?
I haven't heard shit about when that is.
I told you, I have so much respect for Connor. And again, you know, Connor's a great fighter. And Chandler is just such a bull.
Why do you
have wrestling,
for Connor again?
That's a tough fight for Connor. I think again, Connor's a very skilled guy. He fought Nate twice. I mean, he's fought guys. He fought Khabib. He does seem like he does not pick and choose easy opponents. I mean, I'll say that for Connor. He's not afraid of fighting a guy who on paper does not look great. But I think that's a better matchup for Chandler because of the wrestling.
You know what's funny, man? I was listening to Chael Sonnen, who I like.
I love Chael, yeah.
And dude, but this is where I disagree with him, and I think he's being very silly and maybe just trying to be on Connor's good side or some shit.
Did he badmouth your co-host? Oh, okay, good.
No, but he goes like this. He goes, Connor, I was so impressed because there he is with his leg shattered. And to him say, your wife's in my DMs, he's not breaking character. Wrong, Chael Sonnen. What the fuck are you talking about, gangster? What are you, Chael, what the fuck are you talking about? He didn't break character because he's being a douchebag, because he's being the way he normally is. His fucking leg shattered. You think when he gets backstage, he's going to be like, hey, good, we got that. We're selling him for that fucking trilogy fight. No, motherfucker. He's fucking being honest, trying to be just fucking slimy and say some dirty shit to somebody's wife. That's not being in character. That's just being having a lack of fucking character. And the truth, the cage, listen, I know Chael, he practices all his fucking WWE lines and shit, and he did it fucking money. Chael's good. The whole shit.
Chael is better than anybody.
It's not like Chael had a broken shin and he's on the floor going, tell your wife I like it medium rare about the steak with Anderson Silva. He's funny. I like it well done. Like he was saying stuff that was pretty funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And rehearsed. But don't be sitting there saying Connor's some great. Wow, he doesn't break the fourth wall. Yeah, please. Are you crazy, dude? That's just the way he is. That's who he is. Just the fuck who he is.
You might be right. That might be who he really is. Yeah. Right.
I'm not being like, oh, tell me he's a great actor. And that's him saying, that's him not breaking character. What the fuck are you talking about, Chael?
Chael might even be saying that at least, like, for instance, Connor is who he is. I think you're right. He probably really is like that. So he is who he is, and that's how he behaves, at least with Connor. Like with the thing with Chael, too. With Chael, it never felt forced. And with Connor, it doesn't feel forced. Like, you could hate Connor and go, he's a dickhead, but it doesn't feel forced. And I think my guess is that he's commenting on people who feel forced and do it, that it feels like, oh, this is just you making a pretend. Like, there's almost more respect for a guy who really feels that way and is that way than a guy who just puts on that hat.
Yeah, but you're just being a dirtbag. You're just being like, not you, you're a good guy.
Oh.
But to say something about somebody, oh, your wife's in my DMs. No, dude, you're showing. You know who said it the best? Fucking Dustin Poirier, man. He's like, you see him over there? He's just trash. Like, I mean, you know, that the fuck? I don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks like I hate Conor, but it's like, yo, man, you fucking, he's, very good fighter and very good on the mic. You know, and it's fine. Sometimes
and
you
he
like
does take fights. He does take fights that are hard matchups for him, which I respect because a lot, you know, he's not picking and choosing. Michael Chandler's a big fight, but Michael Chandler's not a great fight for Connor. I always thought, again, I've yapped about it enough. I'll shut up. Gaethje Connor's the fight, Matt. How many years since we started this fucking podcast? That's the fight I've been wanting to see, was Gaethje against Connor. But he took Khabib. Not that he had a choice. Khabib was champion, but he still, I mean, he fought him and he fought Nate twice. After having tapped the first time, he wanted to go back and fight him again. After he fought Poirier, wins the first one, loses the second one, wants to come back and fight him again. So there's something about Conor's character with that that I really respect. The fact that he does not run away from a guy who he thinks has a shot at beating him. So I think that there's something, even if that makes him an asshole, I do think there's something about it that's real. So maybe that's what Chael admires, that at least he's being who he is.
Do you hear us, Jonathan Martinez?
Oh, yes, now I do. Sorry, I'll try to connect.
Hey, man. Okay. Congratulations on your fight the other day. Holy shit, was that wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Did you feel like you were going in there as the underdog? Because you didn't, man, you look cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, I'm always calm. I don't really get nervous. I pretty much get more nervous at these interviews right now.
Really?
Yeah, like out there, like, I don't know, because you know how you were in the back, like I was just there laying down, you know, the other guy won, so it was my turn to get up. I kind of get sleepy in the back, so I'm kind of like tired. Just I go real calm in there.
Everybody, Jonathan, for a fight, you know, so some people are chill. You seem like you're nice and relaxed. They have to maybe wake you up when there's a fight or two before. Is that you?
Do they? Yeah, do that? That's right.
That's great, man. That's good.
The fight against Nurmagomedov, that first round, I mean, he was really looked good in that first round. I was so impressed that you were able to survive that. And the second round, you were great. And in the third, he had such a strong start, I thought, to the third. Was it the third round that I'm remembering where you looked like you either slipped or got knocked down? Was that the third round?
Yeah, that was third round.
Now that the fight is over and you have, you know, all three cards, had you 29-28, did you slip or did he knock you down?
I know it was a slip. Yeah, because he's real long, so I kind of didn't want to get punched. So when I kicked, I seen it go, so I kind of threw myself back.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a knockdown.
He tried.
And how tight was that? Oh, sorry, Matt.
No, I was going to say.
How tight was that body lock that he had you in the third?
It was pretty tight, but I was kind of calm because I was in those positions all this fight camp, so I wasn't really worrying about it. I just kept looking up at the time, so I was like, man, I need to hurry up and get back up.
I love when he was doing it was like a judo throw on you. And it's one of those things where you knew you were fighting it at the beginning, and then it's a point where you knew you were just going to go. So if you tried to fight it, it would have been bad. So you went with it and did like a handspring. It was fucking awesome. That was awesome. Rather than I love when I see stuff like that. I'm by myself. I go, that's what I did. I don't want to make it weird. That's a little weird. But I got very excited. Jonathan, you don't see that shit every day. Yeah. What was that?
Yeah. I just go with it. Like, I go with it. Like, even like if they try to like judo toss or whatever, I go with it. What is that? It's like a wrestling move. You know how when they try to grab that single leg and they roll with it? So I kind of mix it up the same and other things when I get thrown and stuff like that. Because I got Yusuf Salah. So he does that a lot. So anyway, I go with it all the time.
Woo! That
there was one
poetry.
One moment. And again, I don't remember what round it was in, but you had him up against the cage, and he was trying to lock his foot around your calf, I think. And what was it? Your coach said, "Don't let him table that." Was that the expression he used? I was just hearing he was warning you to move your knee out so he couldn't lock his foot around your calf, and I guess throw you down. Is that what he said? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, he was telling me about that, and then keep my hand on my head in the inside because he's really good at those guillotines and all this stuff. So there's a couple of times I would put my head on the side and he just a little cozy, you know, I need that head inside, you know, or like prayer, you know, like those, he wanted me to work those elbows in there because we knew he stand real tall. So we worked on those elbows a lot. So, and it worked fine.
When did you start training and where? I know you're at a different breed. Where did you start training?
I started training and I still trained here in Texas and stuff. I actually just about opened my gym in a couple weeks.
Nice.
You know, so I already have everything going because it's pretty much, I'm like the coach here, you know what I mean? So it's been like that for years. So I was like, might as well just open my own gym. And, you know, I have the wrestling coaches. I have, you know, the jiu-jitsu, the striking coach. So I'm about to do all that.
Tell me about your school. What is going on with that? Is it a, is it for all walks of life?
Yeah, so it's pretty much going to be like more like MMA style stuff. It's going to have like kickboxing and all that, but I kind of want like mixed martial art just because I stay in a little town. So there's pretty much not much things to do here. So a lot of guys just want to fight, you know, like they want to get in there. So that's pretty much the way I started here. I was always getting in trouble in school. Yeah. So my dad put me in Taekwondo. And I remember the first time I thought I was like kind of like this little gangster that I was really good. I would fight with my hands down, everything. I actually have those videos still. And I like try to fight and I got beat up and I told my dad I didn't want to go no more. He said, I don't want to go no more. He said, no, you're going to go until you straighten up. So I started doing Taekwondo there. And then I did it for a year and then I stopped. And then I went back to MMA gym and I was kind of acting the same way. And then I remember we paid $50 for the month and then I got beat up bad. And I told my girl, I ain't going no more. Cause at that time she was on working. I was like, I paid for the whole month. So you're going to stay the whole month in there. So from there, I just pretty much just liked it.
Good thing
you. When did that finally change? What finally happened where you're like, okay, yeah, I'm getting beaten up here, but this is, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to stop going. Like what actually clicked for you that made you stop thinking about possibly not returning?
I was a big fan of GSP. So, you know, I just watched his videos and just a lot of things. And I just wanted to be, I was always that guy in school that I would act like kind of like this big and bad that, yeah, my parents let me do whatever. But in reality, I had a bedtime. At 9 o'clock, I had to be in bed. So at 8:30, I had to have everything ready and be in bed already. But I would tell these kids like, yeah, my parents let me stay up at 2 or 3 in the morning. But it wasn't really nothing like that.
What do you like to do? We like to get to know the fighters a little bit. What do you like to do when you're not fighting and you're not working on your new school? Are you a big book guy? You read, you hike? What do you like to do? Your hobbies?
I spend time a lot with my family and then I kind of, we usually go dancing. So it's like a lot of Mexican dancing and stuff like that. So I like doing stuff like that.
You could dance.
Are you a good dancer? Are you good?
I feel like I am, but just Mexican, like, you know, like in part of spinning people around, I'm good at that.
I find it terrifying. Like dancing is scary as shit to me because I'm always so afraid I'm going to be embarrassed or I'm not going to do it well. You're comfortable doing it or do you just do it because you like it?
I'm comfortable. So my girl was teaching me because she didn't want me to be one of those guys because back in the day, I was one of those guys just standing there. That's and I think girls would all go dance. And we just stand there and I thought it looked cool. And now I dance and I see the other guy just standing there. I was like, man, you don't want to dance? Like, he was like, nah, it was good. So they just stand there. So I don't want to do that.
Oh, Jimmy, that's good, Jimmy. I just kind of I do like this. Look. Is that cool or no? Not really. I can't really dance, though. I got flat feet. Okay.
I disagree.
Jimmy, what about you?
Now, Jonathan, I suck. I know I suck, so I don't do it. I slow dance a little bit. What's next for you? Who do you have your eye on next? Or what would you like to see be the next step? Because, you know, it was an incredible fight, and you looked really good, and you were very composed in the fight, too. I think that's the thing I was most impressed with, was the fact there was a couple of times he had you in chokes in the first, and again, that body lock in the third. And it looked really bad at one point. I thought he had gotten under the neck, but apparently not. And they just talk about how calm you were and how well you handled that.
Yeah, I always stay real calm. It doesn't matter if I'm Brock or in those position. I try to stay calm and just try to get out of it. Because I feel a lot of guys, they beat each other by pressure. You know what I mean? Like, they see this crowd. Oh, you're fighting this guy. You know, like, everybody's talking about him. So I'm kind of calm. You know, if I get clipped, I know I just got to stay calm, you know, and get back in there. So I feel real comfortable being in there.
In the third, you had him pressed up against the cage, and they kept saying, Jonathan has to create some space. He's got to get away from him. And I was wondering, but then they gave a stat where you had outlanded him like 17-1 or whatever with just shots in the clinch. Is that why you were staying in the clinch? Were you actually doing a decent amount of damage in the clinch, and you were like, you didn't want to give him the chance to have some space?
So the thing was, we were working a lot, like, because everybody kind of knows my style. You just got to pressure Martinez, he'll block. You know, it's not obvious. It's like, you pressure him, he's going to go back. So this time I work something different. Like, I'm going to be the pressure guy, and I'm going to keep him in the cage. So, you know, I feel like I'm really good of changing it up and fighting different compared to other fighters that if they're one mentality, that's what they're going to do, just shoot, shoot, shoot. So I try to mix it up every fight camp. I try to do different things. Because when I train, I pretty much work a lot of my wrestling and jiu-jitsu. I like wrestling. I'm not a wrestler, but I like to do wrestling all the time.
That's exhausting.
Yeah, so who's on your radar for next? Do you have a person that you're looking towards? I think you're number 14 now, right? You cracked the top 15?
Yes, sir. I wanted Dominic, but I guess he's matched against Cody and stuff.
I'm hearing that they're having a rematch, him and Cody Garbrandt. Oh. That's very interesting.
I think that's weird because he wasn't even ranked and he just got the – it took me a long time to fight a ranked opponent, you know, and then this guy just getting there. I guess he's a ex-champ, but – you know, Figgy, you know, I would like to fight Figgy.
You're on a tear, though, bro. Cubs, yeah. Now, just what you did to Syed. I mean, geez, good for you, bro. It's so exciting. I can't wait to see what's next for you, man. But you're healthy. You want to get in there pretty soon.
Yeah, I told my manager I want to get in there like in July or so.
Shit, man. Fight week.
For fight week, yeah, in Vegas. Well, Jonathan, look, we appreciate it. And congrats on what it was, a tremendous fight. And again, the composure you showed in some really tough spots, and the ability. I mean, he was throwing some beautiful spinning kicks, and he landed a few of them. And you just – it was incredible, your ability to absorb that and keep fighting. So that was an impressive win, man. You looked really, really good and a very tough decision.
Yeah, we worked on a lot of – because I had Chris Gutierrez, you know, so all those spin kicks, you know. I know he would be the perfect there. And then you said he's the same height. So, yeah, I had all these guys there that we worked every day. So, to me, when I'm at camp, and even when I'm not training, I love to train. You know what I mean? Like, I train. My coach tells me, hey, we'll take a day off. And I'll be like, yeah, I'll take Sunday off, but I won't take Sunday off. You know, I'll say I will, but I just go run, do something.
Do something.
So it's great that you're opening this academy, this school, your gym. I was in the UFC, my first two fights. I opened up my first storefront. Here I am now, 20 years later. I taught the morning class today. I'm going back to teach the kids. Jonathan, you enjoy what you do, which you enjoy, the training. You never have to really work a day in your life. You got it figured out, kid, and I'm excited for you. And I'm happy for you. Good job.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again, man. Thank you, Jonathan, and good luck. And please come back when you know who your next opponent is or exactly when, because, you know, 18-4. Crack the top 15, so I'm sure we'll be seeing a great matchup for you next.
You can ask.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. All right, buddy. Pleasure. Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
What a nice guy.
Nice guy. And that fight was really, really good. I couldn't believe he made it out of that first round. That was just really impressive.
Brought the heat, man. Some would say they even call him Mr. Fahrenheit. Faster than the speed of light. And that's our show, everybody. Listen, I want to say thank you for listening. Oh, Jimmy's back. He's back. Jimmy, what do you want to plug?
Here's what I want to plug. The Bert Kreischer Roast airs. Obviously, I'm not at the Fat Black Pussycat tonight. The Bert Kreischer Roast airs April 1st on OnlyFans TV. It's streaming for free. You can watch it. And it's really funny. I hate watching things I'm in. But this one I'm really proud of. And Kill Tony was a great episode. I did Kill Tony. Go to Kill Tony's YouTube. You can watch that. It was a lot of fun. And go to jimnorton.com to see me in Cleveland or Pennsylvania or New Jersey coming up.
SarahBJJ.com. Matt SarahBJJ on Instagram. I also do cameos, which I always see. And I go, oh, that one, that's expired. I got to do that. I suck at that. But Jimmy, safe travels, my little bird. I'll see you next week.
See you soon, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Cramping.
Feel better.